Welcome to Tsunami Soundwave, the podcast dedicated to all things personal protection, safety, and empowerment training. Brought to you by Tsunami Self-Defense Systems.
All right. Hello, all of our Tsunami Soundwave listeners. Hello. We are back.
Final episode of season two. This is crazy.
I know.
Time is flying by.
I feel like we started season one only a couple weeks ago.
I know. It's crazy. But welcome. We're so glad. Thank you for the support. Thank you for listening. Download, share, please. It's the only way we can keep this going.
Yeah.
And you've been great so far. A lot of feedback online and on the social media sites with Tsunami. Thank you.
I know. We love to, you know, see this grow. And, you know, we've, like I said, we had season one. We've, you know, are now on to season two, closing out, finishing up, wrapping up season two.
Yep.
And just seeing that we have listeners.
Yeah, thank
in
you
the
all.
Hundreds is really awesome.
Absolutely. It's growing. They keep sharing this with others. Before we get into it this week, so we're doing it. We're doing a wrap up. We're going to briefly mention all the guests, and then we're going to get into some myths. We love doing the Mythbusters, where we talk about fact and fiction, myths, truths, and misnomers about self-defense and personal protection. We have a few today. We're going to keep it light and short.
Yeah. We on our one of our previous episodes, we did mention and ask you guys to come up with some questions and things like that and, you know, leave us some DMs and comments of things. So we're going to address some of those.
Yeah.
We're going to save some of them for season three. We'll
Absolutely.
Get more. Like, we kind of want to make this particular segment, like, go on for a while.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
You'll...
Yeah.
A Mythbuster episode, I'm sure, on every season that we do.
We hope so, yeah.
But
before we dive into that, we just want to thank, first of all, I'm going to mention our music again. I think this got lost in the episode. I want to shout out to Chris Pascoe and Kevin Rail. We are using music that in a band I was once in. I want to mention that right away because it's not public domain. We get to use this is like, so I just wanted to shout out to those guys. From a band I was in years ago. That's our intro and exit music.
Yeah.
So shout out to those guys. What else?
More fun facts about Rob. He was in a band.
No. I want to say that because I want to give credit for the copyright, uncopyrighted music that we get to use.
No,
those guys
it's amazing.
Are awesome guys. And I believe Chris is still playing in bands. So shout out to Chris Pascoe and Kevin Rail. What else? Thank you to Tanya Morgan, who is... she was on our first two episodes of this season.
Yes.
She's deputy coordinator of Title IX, among other titles and jobs at Lackawanna College in downtown Scranton.
Yeah, we had a really, really, really great conversation with her. We split it into two parts because we couldn't stop the conversation going.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like in order to really get into the topic matter of Title IX, we did need to break it down into two episodes.
Yeah, if you haven't heard those, go back and listen to those two episodes. A lot about her role as a counselor and help with students experiencing all sorts of problems and concerns and violence on campuses around the area in the Scranton, Wilkes-Barre area.
Yeah, and even beyond. It's a great episode, honestly, for any kid that's going off to college. Even kids in regular school, Title IX applies to not just colleges. Mm-hmm. It applies to all education levels.
From kindergarten up.
Yeah. So it's excellent for parents. It's an excellent episode for students to just get a little bit more educated on the resources that you have from the people that are giving you those resources.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a federally mandated program, so use it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Then we had on, I'm going through our guests this season, we had on Janine Luby was one of our guests.
Yes, she was.
Shout out to JL, Laugh to Live, and Funny Wine Girl.
Yes. She was a really fun episode. Mm-hmm. We talked a lot about mental health in that episode, which is a huge part of self-defense. She has such a unique perspective being a laughter yoga instructor. So we learned a little bit about that. She's taken self-defense with us before. So we had a lot of conversations to like cross over different elements of life and again mental health
mental
and
health.
Taking care of yourself and what self-care really is and how to you know destigmatize that and how it could be really essential to your personal protection you know lifestyle.
Absolutely. One of the things I always you know we'll often say in our Tsunami social media posts are things like self-care, self-worth, self-esteem, self-defense.
Yeah,
they are so tied together, so related. to one another. So it's an important episode. Go back and listen to the Janine Luby episode on our season two. And then we had on Michael Agee. Michael Agee.
Yeah.
The Ronin Combatives.
Yeah, that was a really fun episode. Really informative for me. He has such a wealth of knowledge from a martial arts perspective. And it was really great to talk to somebody within also the combative self-defense community who is also instructing and teaching his own classes and has his own way and camps and ways that he's trying to bring this community together across the country. Mm-hmm. And even beyond, he was talking about how he has instructors coming from Canada and places like that for his Midwest Combatives camp. So it was such a great conversation about his way of viewing self-defense, his journey through the combatives world, and, you know, the connections between the things that we do and the things they do.
Oh, there's a reason that we're friends. Yes. There's a reason Michael and I instantly hit it off. But what a great wealth of knowledge in martial arts. But he has the wisdom and the insight and the philosophical ways to tie it to, you know, reality-based or, you know, maybe he doesn't use that phrase, but self-defense and personal protection in general.
Yeah.
Great stuff.
Counter-violence.
Yeah, counter-violence for sure, yeah. Mm-hmm. And that leads us to our fun. And then we did a solo episode on violence dynamics and social and asocial kind of stuff. Go back and hear that one if you haven't.
Yeah, that was a fun educational episode, a little bit of a window into how we teach our self-defense classes, our specifically our intro-level classes. Yeah. We give you a little insight into that, and it's very insightful, great advice in that one.
Yeah, our tips and advice that we, you know, sort of like molded our way, but it comes from Rory Miller's curriculum.
Yep.
So shout out to those guys. Rory Miller's has a phenomenal wealth of knowledge in his stuff, so. Anyway, here we are, our final episode. Drum roll, please. Let's get into a few myths. We're going to start off super simplistic one. This one has been around for a while, and boy, it is frustrating. Because, sadly, in 2024, we still hear it. It still comes up.
We do. Yeah, and even in, like, when we teach classes and stuff like this, people will bring this one up a lot.
And here it is. I know you have to visualize this. I've even seen this, if you Google images of women's self-defense, this is even like stock photo image online. You can
see it. In the top 10.
Yeah, it's crazy. They'll show usually a female with her keys in between her fingers. Mm-hmm. I've actually had more than once, numerous times, more often than I care to count, of women say, oh, I know what I'm doing. I don't need self-defense. I can do this. And it's their keys in between their fingers.
Yeah.
It's so dumb. Like, there's some sort of, like, Claw, Wolverine, Freddy Krueger, Edward Scissorhands sort of, like, thing. Like, what the hell? And this, first of all, I don't believe anyone actually walks around like that. I don't believe women when they say, I keep all my keys in between my fingers, okay?
Yeah, like, taking the time
to put them in between
their... that before you, like, you know, you leave the grocery store or whatever.
Yeah, it's so dumb. This is sad. This is thankfully going away. We live in a world of fobs. People have less keys.
I didn't even think about that, but yeah, people don't carry like actual keys
around.
There's
like
cards.
Not a lot. Cards and fobs are sort of the way we're using in today's day and age. So thankfully it is dying off. But I'll say the one good thing where this comes from, where this probably was born out of, is the idea of improvised weapons.
Yeah.
Using things in your everyday life to defend yourself. That's actually a good mindset and a good frame of mind to be in.
Absolutely.
If I could use the ice scraper or a cane or just a bottle, a fork or knife on the table in the restaurant or diner.
A pen that I'm carrying around.
Yeah. Improvised weapons are great. It's good. They shouldn't be your only thing. You should have something else already first, in our opinion. But if you don't, it's good to have improvised weapon mindset. That's good. But the keys in between their fingers, especially when I don't need your classes, I know how to do this, and it's keys between your fingers poking through like little jabby items.
Yeah.
It's just you're going to cut your hand open. It's not good for the structure of the bones and the hand, the anatomical structure of the human hand. It's just bad advice.
I know. Even in season one in our Mythbusters episode, I talked a lot in detail about, you know, open palm striking versus fist striking, and if you And especially from people that don't take self-defense or martial arts, or they don't train often. Like, it's very, it is so easy to do so much damage when you're closed fist. And that applies if you have your keys in between your knuckles. Like,
especially if you cut the skin open, it's just dumb.
Exactly. Like, sorry, it's just not, dumb. And especially if you're under duress and you're scared and you're caught off guard, like, it is not.
It's just not good. Yeah.
It's not going to do you very well and may actually end up harming you more in the long run.
So we wanted to put that myth to bed. Yeah. It's done. It's over. We will never talk about it again until it comes up.
Yeah. If you take one of our classes, we are not recommending that.
No, please don't.
At all.
So there's another myth.
Yes.
Myth number two. And this one is also not as strong or as well known or as prevalent as it once was, but it still has come up. I'm not going to name certain groups where this is said, but it is said through organizations and also individuals have this sort of thinking. Here's the myth. And that is, I shouldn't fight back. I'll only make the assailant more agitated, more angered, more violent.
Yeah.
If I try to resist. That myth needs to go away.
Yeah.
Okay. It is, I mean, crime stats, you can crunch these numbers and, you know, so I'm going to give a range, but from 65 to 70%, you will prevail in the fight if you fight back, in the encounter, in the self-defense encounter, if you fight back.
Yeah.
As opposed to not trying to make them more angry, that's just flawed thinking.
Yeah.
Now, I want to say that this is from, more often than not, the opportunistic violent encounter where it's a stranger is the attacker.
Okay? Yeah.
That's pretty much where this is coming from, right? Things will change in this myth if we're talking about cyclical domestic violence, long-term relationship stuff. That's not what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
This stat is this myth is thrown around from the standpoint of a opportunistic stranger predator.
Yeah.
Then you should absolutely get violent. You should flip the switch. You should go from 0 to 60. You should go from the calm, cool, tranquil waters to the raging tsunami crashing wave.
Yeah.
Not, oh, I shouldn't get too violent. I don't want to make them more angry.
Right. I mean, and also just to reiterate here, like, this particular myth is never really, it's not talked about from where you're in the avoidance de-escalation stage. Like, the fight is already happening itself. Once things are being thrown down, like, all bets go out the window. And at that
point, you're ambushed.
Exactly. Like, you're not going to be able to escalate or de-escalate at that point. It's already happening. You're already in the thick of it. Whereas if it's preemptively, like, before any type of physical interaction is taking place, there's potentially an opportunity to de-escalate and to calm things down, maybe. But yeah, this is myth coming from, we're already past that point. We're not even, you know, or it never was even there to begin with.
Exactly.
So
yeah, you are, and stats will show, the survival rate shoots through the roof if you fight back.
Yeah.
Criminals, predators want an easy mark. They want meek prey. Excuse me. You know, they don't want to be caught. They don't want to be hurt. They don't want to be identified. So if you fight back, you're increasing their chances of being apprehended or injured. Just what they don't want.
Right.
So fighting back is the way to go. So you should be training in something that gives you the skill set to fight back.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. There's two quick myths. Boom.
Yeah, we pumped those out pretty quickly.
You know?
But no, you're right. They are things that are still said, even though, like you said, they're dying out. They're not as prevalent anymore. Or they aren't preached. I think especially from the self-defense community, I don't hear that. Or the combatives community. Like, I feel like that's not really talked about from advice standpoint.
Exactly.
Like, oh, do this. Or, yeah, that's right. So that's a good thing. But it still gets brought up. And we still have also people that come in that say similar things or ask similar things or, you know, think a particular way. And we just want to give you guys a little bit of a broader perspective when it comes to ways to defend yourself.
Now, we have another, there's two more myths. We're doing four total ones, but these last two, they definitely
kind of piggyback off each other.
They cross over. There's gray area in between the two.
Yeah.
So here I'm going to state the two myths, and then we will explore the ways we're debunking them both. Mm-hmm. Okay. The first myth is, oftentimes you will hear from certain trainers, from certain coaches, instructors, whatever, that you could defend yourself against anyone. Size does not matter. That's myth number one. Mm-hmm. Myth number two, you're tiny and petite. You can't defeat a bigger, larger assailant. Okay, so you see already the dual play going on here. Okay?
Yeah, it seems like
both are untrue.
Yeah, and which seems bizarre because it seems like the other one is the counter to the other, but let us kind of break this down a bit because...
Yeah, so here's the first one again. Size doesn't matter. You defeat anyone if you know this martial art or this, if you have these weapons or whatever. Okay, so size doesn't matter. You can defeat anyone. And the second myth is, I can't defeat this larger, bigger assailant. I'm too small and petite, mm-hmm. or I'm too tiny, or I'm a smaller framed person. Mm-hmm. Okay? So, size definitely matters. Yeah. There are techniques and things in play that if you know them, you won't be able to pull off everything in your skill set if the person is huge, if the person is way bigger, heavier, longer, you know, bigger size, bigger frame.
Yeah.
Okay. That's why oftentimes in combat sports and in martial arts tournaments, even in the Olympics, there's weight classes, mm-hmm. there's size classes. You know, there's a reason they sort of like put these framed bodies that are roughly the same size and same weight against one another.
Yeah.
You know, and they'll look at the tail of the tape at the start of any fight, boxing or cage fighting. The reach is one of them, like mm-hmm. the length of the opponent's arm. You know, the size definitely matters.
It does.
Okay, so it is a concern that you need to understand, right? And then add in reality based stuff where there's more than one assailant. You're out the street. You're not even aware that this is even happening. Mm-hmm. It's not a prize fight or a designated tournament.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you don't want to be ignorant to size is really what is
right.
the main driving point here. If, mm-hmm. You know, because that can really hinder your strategy and the way that you go about defending
yeah.
yourself if you ever were put in that particular type of situation.
Right. So.
So, moving to myth four that we mentioned here.
The fourth one.
Which sounds like the exact opposite of our first myth.
But you've heard this, have you not? As an instructor, especially the female clientele.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I can never do that. I can't defeat this person. He's
well,
so much bigger.
I usually hear it in hindsight, where it's like, after somebody takes a class, they'll make a comment where they're like, I never would have thought that like somebody as petite as me could ever defend themselves against somebody who... It isn't the same size as me, somebody bigger, somebody taller, somebody lankier, someone heavier. Like,
right.
I never thought that there was ways that I could, you know,
okay.
actually get through something like this.
Right.
And there are. It's not impossible to defend yourself against somebody who is of a larger size than you.
Right.
Not impossible.
Right. Can you pull off any move? No.
No.
Can you defeat them? Yes.
Yeah.
And I think that's the sentence we want you to focus on, folks. Mm-hmm. So there's got to be a certain skill set
yeah.
and a certain way to train
yeah.
to defeat someone who is bigger and larger.
And it goes back to the point of the first one. Like, you can't be ignorant to size. You
right.
have certain affordances mm-hmm. when there are size differentials. But if you don't know those and if you don't pay attention to that fact, then you're going to get
right
in trouble
exactly.
in a lot more ways than one.
And it's also, there's another, I just thought of another myth that would tie into this. Like,
okay.
Like some of the wording I hear often, in especially for people who I don't need these classes. And it's this. I don't need any martial art or any reality-based self-defense skills or combative skills. I'll just kick them in the groin or eye gouge them. Like,
yeah.
You know, it said, just eyes, throat, crotch. That's all I need.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are they good targets? Yeah. Are they 100% reliable? No.
No, not at all.
So, like, that's you can't sum it up and wrap it up in a neat little package, put a bow on it that easily either.
Yeah. And they're also not techniques that are going to inflict a lot of damage.
Right. Yeah.
They can help, but if, mm-hmm. I mean.
Yeah, you need.
That wouldn't be what I would recommend right away.
Right. Now, are they good targets? Sure.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody can't see, they can't, you know, hit you as well. Like, you know what I mean? Like, take away vision, take away, you know, weight-bearing limbs, take away ability to breathe properly. Mm-hmm. They're all good concepts to adhere to when we're fighting someone for our lives.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can defeat bigger and larger opponents. And then something that that Mike was talking about in his episode was that budo, that mindset,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that has to be there too, especially to defeat a bigger, larger assailant.
Yeah.
And I know, Margaret, when we were planning this episode, you talked about being empowered by this knowledge and
yeah.
these skills.
And that's what I've seen when people take our classes, because I think that that is always, especially from a women's perspective, that is in the back of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
At least it was in the back of my mind when I started too, and I'm very tall. Like
yeah.
I'm not a small person.
No, no,
you see other people and you see you have a particular. I feel like everybody has that blueprint in their mind as to like
yeah.
what an assailant is in their head,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, it's intimidating, and you do immediately think, yeah, I have no chance, or like
yeah.
I have no idea how to even approach somebody who would be bigger, taller, in size
stronger
than me and coming at me, wanting to do harm.
Yeah.
So that was one thing I saw, and I even talked about this last season in Alyssa's episode, because she was one of the first instructors
yeah.
that I had.
She's
and
very petite.
She's tiny, 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 and mm-hmm. I watched her literally take you down, and it wasn't like...
True story.
It wasn't like, oh, wow, like, this move works. It was like, no, she literally took you down.
Right.
Like, full blown.
Yeah.
There's no way around that, or like no, magic trick to that. And I was like, wow. Like, there are ways that you can use affordances, that there are things that you can do that, you wouldn't have thought of
mm-hmm.
if you guys, again, were different sizes, but there's ways you can work the body. There
Absolutely.
Really are.
Yeah.
If you understand it. And that's where the training is so important, because you can get over these fears. You could get over these myths and stigmas, and also respect them at the same time.
Exactly.
Like, again,
exactly.
size, it does matter, but if you understand that, you can work around that in
yeah.
a lot of really amazing ways.
Yeah. I hope everyone is following us on this dual myth here, where size doesn't matter. Not true. And I can never beat a bigger or stronger opponent. That is also not true.
Yeah.
So, but mindset is the other key.
Yeah.
And that, again, as Margaret said, comes with the training to your mental capacity, your mental switch that,
yep.
that flips on. And that's stuff we foster and have you, slowly and but surely get stronger inside you. So that's the wrap up on that myth. I don't want to go any further on those because,
I could talk on this for a while.
Yeah,
actually.
No, well, go ahead if you want to see if there's another point.
No,
you want to make.
I think it's good to like wrap it here. I think, if you say too much sometimes, then
yeah.
the concept gets lost. Yeah. But no, this is a topic matter that I have heard personally so
yeah.
much from teaching these classes to women, and it is really also satisfying to be able to debunk these two points.
Yeah, yeah. The answer is in the training. The answer is in your lifestyle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It
yeah,
makes
absolutely.
Such a difference. It really does. A lot of things that I think can run through a lot of people's minds who have not, stepped foot in, a dojo or a self-defense studio or wherever,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
at least who haven't trained in any kind of physical art, because I don't want to limit it to just self-defense,
no.
too. I feel like martial artists understand this, too. It's
mm-hmm.
like, it makes such a difference.
It does.
And it really does open up your ability to understand your own body, understand other people's bodies, and there
yeah.
are solutions. There's ways.
There's ways to
get
it.
Through.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
yeah. Listen, folks, thank you for supporting Tsunami Soundwave. If you have other myths misnomers, truth, facts, and fictions about self-defense and personal protection, send them our way.
Yeah, like I said, we're keeping this going. I feel like every season we're going to have at least one episode that's going to be like this. So
this will probably be the last season for this year, so you'll see us 2025. We will see you back for season 3. Check out Tsunami Self-Defense on all its platforms. We have a really great YouTube channel, Tsunami Vision.
Yeah.
And then we have a strong Facebook and Instagram presence. Follow us there.
Yeah.
And check us out on our paid subscription, like Patreon. Mm-hmm. Just keep training. Stay safe. Guard up. Be your own first line of defense.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Tsunami Soundwave. Don't forget to download, subscribe, review, and follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Tsunami Self-Defense Systems.